Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, Anthony Flynn, on behalf of defendant below and appellee National Union Fire Insurance Company of Pittsburgh, PA. With me in court this morning is Mr. John Sullivan from Post and Shell, who's been admitted pro hoc vice in this action, and in accordance with the allocation of the appellee's time, will follow Mr. Griffith and present argument on behalf of National Union.
Welcome, Mr. Sullivan.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, and please the court. Stephen Castrino for Harleysville Insurance Company. This is a dispute among three insurance companies. Church Insurance Company is what we call a specialty company. It insures churches. Actually, it insures only Episcopal churches. And it insured Cathedral Community Services. Mr. Brown was injured while he was on property of Cathedral. And he sued Cathedral and Capital Management, which was the management company. Church's policy also provided coverage for property managers. Cathedral had an excess or an umbrella policy with National Union Fire Insurance Company, and Capital had a general liability policy with Harleysville Insurance Company. The key issue is what are the obligations of the primary carrier with regard to the payment of post-judgment interest and defense costs. It is undisputed and now conceded in the briefing that Church's policy for Capital was primary, and Harleysville's policy was an excess policy with regard to Capital. It specifically states that it is excess to property managers. Under general insurance law, the primary carrier pays the entire judgment, and that includes pays interest on the entire judgment, and that includes interest even if it exceeds limits. And that's what the church policy states, and that's found on 829 of our appendix. The church policy pays all interest on the entire amount of any judgment. The Harleysville policy, when it is an excess policy, does not have any provision for the payment of interest, which would be consistent with an excess policy. It does provide interest if it's a primary policy, but as an excess, it does not. So we have the policies themselves, church's policy saying it pays all interest on the entire judgment. And that's usually the same for costs. As a matter of fact, the church policy provides the same page that it has a duty to defend. The Harleysville policy specifically states that if it's an excess carrier, it has no duty to defend. So when you put the policy provisions together in the general law, it's fairly clear that the primary carrier has to pay interest on the judgment and attorney's fees that are incurred. The problem with the case, of course, is that the court below found that Harleysville waived Capital's rights. And here we believe the court erred as a matter of law. And I have to go back and talk a little about some of the facts here. This accident, when it happened, was investigated thoroughly by Church Insurance Company. It was reported to Church. Harleysville was not informed of the accident. When suit was filed, Church undertook a defense of Cathedral, it's insured, but it did not undertake a defense of Capital, also it's insured. It never notified Capital that Capital wasn't insured. It took a position at trial that was contrary to Capital's. In Form 30 interrogatory answers, it never identified Capital as an insured. It settled the case with the plaintiff without protecting the interests of Capital. And more importantly, when asked to take over the defense of the case, it specifically stated that Capital was not an additional insured, which is an absolute fabrication because its own policy listed Capital as an additional, listed property manager as an additional insured. And that is such an important part of the case because it undermines exactly what's been going on. And I asked the court to take a look at Exhibit A197, which is a letter from Church's attorney to Church following the conversation where I asked for a copy of the policy. And that letter says, as per your instructions, this is to Church, I did advise Capital's counsel that the management company was not named as an additional insured on any policy covering the subject property at the time of Mr. Brown's accident. That is incorrect. So So they informed us that we were not an insured, did everything consistent with our not being an insured. Now, Church, of course, knew that Capital was the property manager, not just from its investigation, but the complaint alleges that Capital was the property manager, and Cathedral admitted that in the answer. So there's no question but that it was a property manager. The court made some comments. On page 23, for instance, the court said, and I think incorrectly, it's a fundamental mistake of fact, that Capital tendered its defense to Harleysville, its own carrier, prior to Church receiving notice of the claim. That is not so. This accident was reported to Church, not Harleysville. Church is the one who investigated, and Church is the one that did everything to get the case ready, in a sense, and it carried the laboring oar, at least during the pretrial. Normally, insurance companies defend all of their insurers. In this case, of course, Church did not. Now, Harleysville, of course, had a policy with Capital, so when Capital came to Harleysville, Harleysville had an obligation to defend it, and it did. But to give you an idea of the difficulty we had in trying to determine what Church's position was, the deposition of Mr. Lindgren was taken last year, March 12th. He's a representative of Church. So we're talking 4.5 years after the suit was filed, 2.5 years after the trial, and that's only 155, because we asked Church at that time, are you now ready to concede that the Church is uninsured? And they said that no. They still hadn't made a decision as to whether or not Capital was insured by Church. So that was as of last year. They still hadn't made that decision. So here we have Church telling us that Capital was not an insured. Its own attorney or its own representative saying, we haven't made a decision that it's an insured. We don't have a copy of the policy. We didn't get the policy until we had to file a motion to compel to get it. But that, of course, said that the Capital was insured. Yet the position of Church is, well, you should have done something more to get that information. You should have somehow known or should have known that Capital was insured by Church. So their position is, well, we never told Capital. When specifically asked, we told them they were not. And as of March of 2004, we still hadn't decided. Yet, for some reason, Harleysville waived its rights by defending Capital. We didn't waive our rights. If Capital was not defended by somebody, there would have been consequences. It's entitled to a defense. But it was also entitled to a defense by the Church Insurance Company.
When the Church and Capital entered their contractual relationship, did Capital not ask whether or not it would be named as an insured under any general liability policy or excess policy for that matter? And did it not have a copy of the insurance coverage provided by Church?
No, there was no relationship between Capital and Church. Capital was not named as a person. It was named as an entity, as the property manager. There was no relationship.
Okay, so when someone sent a letter saying they were not a named insured, no one misinterpreted that to mean that Capital wasn't listed as a specific entity, but was a named insured in the sense of a property manager generally.
No one sent a letter mentioning named insured. The conversation with...
I thought you just read something that said...
Additional insured.
Sorry, I misheard you.
They said it was additional insured is what the letter says, and that's important because they're listed as an additional insured. No, there's no question it's not a named insured. The named insured would have been Cathedral. But we asked if it was listed somehow as an additional insured, and the letter says not an additional insured. And the policy, which is on A28, specifically says insured means any person or organization named as an insured and also the following additional insureds, and it's any person or organization while acting as a real estate manager before the named insured. So it's an additional insured, not the named insured.
Well, Capital was working for the named insured, correct?
That's correct.
And Capital never then, I take it, asked the named insured, do you have a policy that covers us? Or for a copy of that policy?
Not until the litigation started. And we did.
Question was, as a part of the contractual relationship for the work that Capital did for the named insured, I don't know how many churches are involved here, but...
One.
Church church the carrier and church the primary named insured. They didn't have any indication of whether they had coverage or not under the named insured policy?
No. I don't know if the court recalls this, but there was a contract that had been entered into between Capital and Cathedral to do the work. And that, maybe that's what you're referring
to. That's right. That's right.
But the court concluded that that contract was good for 1 year and then was voided after that because the parties hadn't signed it. So technically there was no contract, but it is correct that under the terms of that contract, there were provisions that said that the Cathedral would provide insurance and name Capital as an insured. That's true.
And yet Capital never asked for physical evidence of that, that that had actually occurred?
That's correct. So far as I know, it did not. That did not come about until after the mediation process failed in the process of preparing for trial. We suspected that there might have been an insurance policy out there and asked for it, or at least asked to see if there was coverage. And then we were told specifically that, as you heard, that there was no coverage, that it was not a named insured. We didn't.
So
you just said again named insured, that they were not a named insured.
I shouldn't say named insured. Insured under the policy is what I meant to say. I don't think there's a difference, Your Honor, between named insured and insured for purposes of insurance coverage. But it was whether the person is also insured under the policy, whether Capital was insured.
Well, the only reason I inquire is it seems significant about when you knew or didn't know that there was other coverage available, and that other coverage would have been primary coverage and you would have necessarily been excess. So I want to make sure that nobody quibbles over the distinction between you were accurately told that Capital was not a named insured because they were only arguably an additional insured because of the nature of the service they provided.
That's correct. We weren't concerned about named insured. We knew that. Because if they were named insured, there's no doubt that they would have provided the defense, but whether there was an additional insured under the policy. We didn't know it until we received the policy, to answer your court's inquiry. There was no way we would have known until we received the policy. And we had to fight to get that policy from Church.
The other side seems to argue in its brief that there was more you could and should have done to find out if Capital were an additional insured under the Church's policy.
They do, and I don't know what more we could have done. As I mentioned earlier, it is generally recognized in the insurance industry that the insurance companies defend their insureds, not just their named insureds, but anyone who is an additional insured. The insurance companies determine that at the outset of the case. I mean, just by way of example, and that's all it's going to be because I'm running out of time, on Monday I got a new file in. There were three named defendants. I got a letter from the insurance company saying you're to defend the named insured and the two other defendants who are additional insurance under the policy. The attorney does what the insurance company tells them to do. Okay, that's what we do. We would have no reason to suspect that Capital was a named insured or an additional insured unless we're told. The insurance company has the obligation to tell Capital it didn't. But we suspected it, and I think we suspected it, and that's when we asked specifically, is it additional insured? And we're told no. We're told no.
Before you sit down, as I understand your argument, when you're told no, and that's the basis for your legal argument that a waiver constitutes a relinquishment of a known right, and if you're told you don't have the right, you can't say that you waived it by relinquishing it.
Well, that is true. Not only did we not know, not only were we told that there was no coverage, every act that Church had done was inconsistent with Capital being an insured. Like I said, they took a position all along that they were adverse. That's not what insurance companies do with an additional insured. You would defend an additional insured.
But just so I understand your argument, what you're saying is given those facts in the record and given the denial of coverage at all, it's your position that the reversible error committed by the Superior Court was nevertheless finding a waiver.
The court below found a waiver, which is a relinquishment of a known right, which there is no evidence whatsoever that Harleysville knew in this case that a Capital was insured by Church until it received that policy. There's no evidence whatsoever.
I'm agreeing. All of my questions were friendly questions.
I'm just trying to explain to her that.
I understood your position.
That's our position. That's our position. And I, with the 30 seconds left, I want to just discuss briefly the claim involving National. The National policy is by definition an umbrella policy, but there's been decisions, even decisions from the Superior Court, Liberty Mutual versus Fireman's Fund, that said you don't look at what a policy is called, you look at what the policy language says. Hardeesville has an endorsement, which is the key to this entire case, and that endorsement in essence says that if you are a property manager, we are excess to all other insurance, no matter what. We are excess to all other insurance. It says it quite clearly, any other valid and collectible insurance. The National policy says it's excess when there's other insurance. However, it is not excess if the other insurance is specifically written to be in excess of this policy. When you put those two together, you have the Hardeesville policy saying we are excess to all other policies. You have the National policy saying we are excess except if another policy specifically says it's excess, as we have here. Therefore, under the policy itself, no matter what you call them, it still becomes we are excess to all other coverages. National Union falls in before us, or National Fire. So when you look at the policies themselves, the wording of the policies, Church becomes primary. National Union is the next step, because once a retained limit is gone, the National Union falls in and becomes, by definition, excess to Church. And Hardeesville, by its own policy, becomes excess to all others. And the court, I think, erred below because it simply said, well, national policy is an excess policy or an umbrella policy, therefore it's umbrella to all other policies, but not in the way this policy is written.
Thank you, Mr. Castorino.
Thank you.
Because I'm not very good at math, I'll let you, counsel, decide how you want to divide your additional 1 minute and 38 seconds that I add on.
Good morning, may it please the court. Dan Griffith on behalf of Appellee and Cross Appellant Church Insurance Company. With the court's permission, I will argue both our opposition to Hardeesville's appeal and our cross appeal in the 14 minutes that have been allotted during this period of time. I believe that the appeal itself is somewhat improperly framed to the extent that it suggests that it is based upon some language in the trial court's opinion that says that Hardeesville waived Capital's right to a defense, because I don't think that is fundamentally what we are arguing about. What we are arguing about is not whether or not Capital lost something by Church's failure to do something. Capital Management's rights were fully vindicated. It had a right to a defense from both Church and Hardeesville. It had a right to indemnity from both, and it received a defense from Hardeesville and indemnity from both. What we are talking about, and what I believe Hardeesville is really challenging, is the trial court's finding that Hardeesville, by its conduct, and whether it's characterized as waiver or estoppel or something else, forfeited its right to recoup its defense costs and payment of post-judgment interest as a consequence of its conduct. And because I believe that is the properly framed argument of the appeal, I think the focus should really be on not what Church did in response to the claim, but whether what Hardeesville did in forfeiting through waiver or estoppel or something else its right to recoup its defense costs.
Well, before you start with that, did Church ever give the impression that Capital was not an insured?
Church, when you say ever, the first time the issue came to Church's attention was one business day before the trial, when the request was made by Capital Management's counsel for a copy of the policy.
Right, well, let's step back then from the beginning. And when the policy talks about insuring property managers, why didn't they just assume the defense of the property manager as an additional insured?
I think the testimony from the claims handler at that time was that when the claim came in, they received a notice of loss from their own insured, from Cathedral. And the notice of loss simply said that the accident had occurred. The lawsuit had not been filed yet. So as far as Church knew, its own insured, the property owner, was going to have a claim filed against it. Then the complaint was ultimately filed. And the testimony from Capital Management's representative was that when Capital Management received the lawsuit, it sent it directly to Harleysville, because all he knew was that Harleysville was their insurance carrier. So Church never really got anything until a day before the trial, saying that Capital Management, as a defendant, is requesting a defense. Now,
no, I understand the line of the request, right. But if we go back to Mr. Casarino's scenario, which, you know, we can take judicial notice of, you did get the complaint, and there were two defendants. One was your insured, and one was the property manager, who was an additional insured. When you get the complaint and you see the insured and an additional insured as the only two defendants, why didn't you defend them both?
My understanding from the claims handler's testimony at his deposition was that he did not consider when the complaint was received whether or not Capital Management would be entitled to a defense. It just didn't come to his mind. He did not, I assume, know at the time that the property manager was not named by its title, but just, you know, by the terms of the policy, the property manager did not know at that time or did not think that, hey, maybe we should be affording coverage to the co-defendant as well. I just didn't think of it.
So you're telling me the custom is not to read the complaint, you just read the caption?
My understanding is that the custom is to read the complaint, and at that time they had already had an investigation performed. They had confirmed coverage for their named insured, and I think they, at that time, tendered the case to defense counsel.
In the course of their investigation, did they determine that there was a property manager who might be in some way as liable, or at least on a pro rata basis, liable with their named insured?
During the course of the investigation, they found out there was a property manager, but they did not know that that property manager was an additional insured.
Well, did they take a position adverse to Capital?
They filed a complaint that included cross claims against Capital.
So it's not as if they didn't know that Capital existed as an entity and that Capital had served at the time of the occurrence as the property manager for their named insured. They knew all that.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Did they not know the term of their own policy, which included the property manager as an additional insured?
I presume that the claims handler did not know that provision of the policy would apply in this circumstance.
Well, forget about the claims manager. The entity for which he worked, were they under a legal obligation to know who their insureds were at the time of knowledge of an occurrence?
I believe they were.
Then why did things play out as they did? Are they not under a legal obligation to notify all their insureds, their named insured, as well as any additional insured named by the act for which they're insured rather than by their corporate or legal name?
I believe that's the crux of our cross-appeal. It's our position that the insured has the duty, both under the policy and under the law, to tender the case to the insurance carrier. The insurance carrier is not obligated to do something proactive or affirmative to ask the insured whether they would like coverage or defense.
I was going to ask maybe the same thing Justice Berger was going to ask. And frankly, it happens from time to time. Even under circumstances where they've already undertaken an investigation and know of an occurrence, I could understand the law if it said, we don't even know about an occurrence or a potential claim until the insured tells us and asks and submits it to us, gives us notice, so we can both investigate, provide a defense. Under circumstances where notice of the occurrence comes from the named insured but not from an additional insured, but then there's an investigation and they find out about the additional insured, does the law shift the burden to the insurer?
I think, Your Honor, the party's duties in those circumstances are still governed by the terms of the policy. And the terms of the policy still require any insured, whether it's a named insured or an additional insured, to notify the carrier of the case and a request for a defense.
Well, how is the additional insured supposed to do that when the additional insured doesn't even know about the insurance?
I think in certain cases, an insured's compliance with the notice provisions of the policy can be excused where not only the insured had no reason to know, which is not the case here, but also that the insurance carrier is not prejudiced by that late notice.
When you say had no reason to know, which is not the case here, what was their reason to know at the outset that there was coverage?
at least two significant factual matters, Your Honor. The first is the contract between Capital Management and Cathedral.
The one that says that they'll provide insurance?
Correct.
But it doesn't say what company, does it?
The contract provides that Capital would go out and get coverage for Cathedral, naming Capital as an additional insurer. In addition to that...
Wait a second. Capital was supposed to get the insurance from Church?
Capital was supposed to get the insurance for Cathedral and naming itself as an additional insurer. That's what the contract required.
Did they do that?
They did not.
Okay, so much for the contract. What's the other reason?
The more significant one, Your Honor, is upon the filing of the complaint, Capital Management's representative forwards the complaint to Harleysville. And Harleysville at that time, which was Capital's representative, in their claims notes makes it very clear that they know, and it says it definitively in their claims notes, if there is third-party coverage on behalf of Cathedral, on behalf of the property owner, if that coverage exists out there, we're entitled to coverage as an additional insured. The problem they had is that for some reason, they mistakenly believed that Cathedral was self-insured, that there was no third-party coverage. Then what we have is the answer to complaint filed on behalf of Cathedral, which says, right around that time frame as well, which says, identifies Church Insurance Company as a third-party commercial insurance carrier for Cathedral. Well, certainly at that point, those two facts combined, Harleysville's knowledge that if there's third-party commercial coverage for Cathedral, we're an additional insured. Then they find out that there is third-party commercial coverage. That's a year and a half before the trial. They serve written discovery requests. They defend Capital Management for a year and a half, and the business day before the trial. I don't know what happened between that occurrence and a year and a half later that turned the light on for Harleysville.
Well,
that made them think maybe we
are. The reason we're asking a lot of these questions is because you started your argument by saying the conduct of Church was irrelevant, and part of the conduct of Church was not only that they didn't defend their additional insured, they sued their additional insured. So if Church, which has the policy and knows that the property manager is an additional insured, can be excused for never reading its own policy and then suing its own insured, why is Harleysville so culpable?
Your Honor, with respect to the appeal, Church has not been excused. Church was required, because of that very finding, to pay the remaining $475,000 on its indemnity. It had a $1 million limit. It settled for $525,000.
But that wasn't a punishment. It just put it where it should have been in the first place.
Well, it assumed that Church should have had a duty to defend, which it did not discharge. That was the trial court's finding. So Church was not excused. It was found to have violated its duty to defend and was required to pay the remaining $470,000 on its indemnity. The trial court's additional finding, which is being challenged on appeal, is whether or it goes beyond that. I don't think the trial court was saying that Church would not, under other circumstances, owe defense costs related to Capital Management's defense. The trial court's finding is, well, did Harleysville, by its conduct or inaction, forfeit its right to recoup that from Church? I think a fair reading of the trial court's opinion is that ordinarily, Harleysville probably would have a right to recoup its defense costs and post-judgment interest from Church.
But at the time the trial commenced, wasn't your client on record in writing saying that it didn't have coverage for the property manager?
No, Your Honor. It may be semantics, but I think it's important. The inquiry was, is Capital Management named as an additional insured? Which I think was interpreted by the carrier as, are they named as an additional insured? And the terms of the policy say nothing about Capital Management. I don't think it was a purposeful response when the response was, no, they are not named as an additional insured. I don't think that was being fast and loose with the semantics. I think it really was an inquiry as to, hey, is Capital Management named as an additional insured?
Wait a second. Why would somebody ask that question other than to find out whether they have coverage, period? Why would the person asking that question be saying, I'm only interested in knowing whether this company's name is on the policy, not whether this company is covered by the policy? What's the rationale for saying that they wouldn't want to know that?
I think that's a point well taken, Your Honor. I think obviously the only reason they were making the inquiry a day before trial was because they wanted coverage, whether it has a named insured or an additional insured. The distinction to them didn't matter.
Fine. So wasn't the answer that was given inconsistent with the purpose of the inquiry and inaccurate with respect to the true purpose of the inquiry?
I think it was an honest answer. I don't think it, while it responded to the letter of the inquiry, I'm not sure it responded to the spirit of the inquiry. I agree, Your Honor. I agree that what probably happened at that time was that there are endorsements that name additional insureds by name. And I think what happened was the insurance carrier looked to see whether any endorsements naming Capital as an additional insured and responded saying no. I don't think they looked at the balance of the substance of the policy to see whether the property manager's name.
So we're down to the situation where Harleysville asked the wrong question. And because they asked the wrong question, they wound up providing a defense. And that's tough luck for Harleysville.
No, Your Honor. If Harleysville, at that time, a year and a half after it knew, or should have known, that it was entitled to it, and had conducted the defense in a manner in which it was perhaps imprudent, a day before the trial, even if Harleysville had asked at that time, are we an additional insured, or is Capital additional insured, and Church would have responded, yes, you're an additional insured. It was a day before the trial, after all of the water had been under the bridge. So at that point, it would be our position that they had already, after a year and a half of defending the case, forfeited their right to have somebody from on behalf of the church come in and defend the case a day before the trial.
But don't you think if that would have been known, everyone would have gone into the judge and said, you know, we've got a problem here. We have an additional insured that was sued by the person that was supposed to be extending coverage to them, and we're going to have to kind of regroup here and see where everything shakes out.
As a practical matter, I don't think it would have made a difference, Your Honor, because you know, Mr. Casarino had defended Capital for a year and a half throughout the litigation, and he ultimately tried the case afterwards. I'm not sure that the result would have been any different. Maybe the indemnity obligations would have been affected, but ultimately, because of the trial court's ultimate findings, nothing would have changed. Church still paid its entire indemnity amount. The change didn't. The revelation did not change anything.
No, but you're mixing together what was known the day before trial, and how the judgment got sorted out after everybody was properly identified, and you know those aren't really the two issues we're asking questions about. We're trying to find out whether Harleysville went into this defense and with complete accurate knowledge.
I think Harleysville had all the information it needed to know that it was an additional insured or put it on notice that it was likely an additional insured under the policy and by its own claims notes a year and a half before trial.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is John Sullivan and I represent National Union. National Union provided an umbrella excess policy to Cathedral Management. The issue in this case is whether or not the Harleysville policy, which was a primary policy that was issued to Capital Management, should be paying before the National Union policy. In order to make that determination, we have to look at the contract language. The contract language of the Harleysville policy, like most policies, has an other insurance provision. That other insurance provision is supposed to address the situation in which you have two policies or more than two policies that might apply to the same loss. The Harleysville policy said this insurance is primary except when B below applies, which was paragraph B. There's no question that paragraph B doesn't apply. And if this insurance is primary, our obligations are not affected unless any of the other insurance is also primary. The National Union policy was not primary. There's no question about it. It's been conceded during oral argument today. It was conceded in the brief.
Is it of any moment to your argument that Church's policy was primary, which would make Harleysville excess, and therefore you'd have two excess policies?
No, Your Honor, because the way our policy is written, we have a provision in our policy, and specifically because it is a was designated as an excess policy, and it is the retained limits provision of the policy, which defines when it is that Harleysville, or I'm sorry, when it is that National Union would pay. And that policy, that retained limits provision, says that we are excess over any other collectible insurance that is applicable to the insured. So we are in.
Is that what the Harleysville policy says too?
No, it doesn't, Your Honor. The Harleysville policy initially says that it's primary.
Right, I know that.
And then the Harleysville policy does have a real estate managed endorsement, but that real estate managed endorsement doesn't make it a policy that would be excess over an excess policy or an umbrella policy. Because in order to read that policy, that endorsement that way, you'd have to look at the other insurance provision that says our policy is primary, and unless the other insurance that's out there is also primary, our obligations aren't affected. And when you look at their policy and you look at the endorsements that were in their policy, they do have, in other endorsements, provisions that say this endorsement amends some other language or replaces some other language or supersedes some other language. None of that language is contained in their real estate managed endorsement. So in order for them to succeed, you have to look at that policy language and say, notwithstanding the fact that it doesn't say it trumps every other provision in the policy, that that's how it can be read. And I don't think that there's any basis in the policy language for reading it that way, particularly when you look at the way the policy was otherwise structured. And whenever Harleysville wanted a provision to say that it superseded or amended or added or replaced another provision, it specifically had that language. It doesn't have it in the real estate managed endorsement. I also think you have to look at what happened in this case. In this case, you have an accident that occurs in 1999. You have Harleysville takes over the defense in 2000. My issue, whether Church should have done it or not have done it, is not what I'm here to argue. They continue to defend. They continue to handle the case. It's not until 2003, when this case is filed, that they finally say, oh, all along, it's National Union that should have been in here. I think that that indicates their own understanding of what this contract meant, what it was supposed to mean. This contract, the contract language is clear. It is consistent with the way policies are structured, and that is there's an understanding in the insurance industry that you have primary policies, you have excess policies, sometimes you have second layer excess policies. And our policy did say that if there is an other insurance that's out there that was specifically written to be excess over our policy, then we would give deference to that. But that is clearly intended to deal with the situation in which you have a second layer excess policy above our policy. It's not meant to say that if somebody has a primary policy, a primary policy that says our obligations are not affected unless there's another primary policy, that somehow that policy will pay after the National Union policy. Their real estate managed endorsement was given effect in this case. We have two primary policies that were at issue here. We have the Church policy, we have the Harleysville policy. Church has conceded that its policy pays first. Their real estate managed endorsement worked for them because Church pays first. But what it didn't do, it didn't trump the language that said our obligations are primary and are not affected unless the other insurance is also primary. Thank you, Your Honor. I'm out.
Thank you.
Please, the court. Thomas Leff for Harleysville on rebuttal. First, with respect to National Union's argument that the Harleysville real estate endorsement is not applicable because it is, in essence, a primary policy. The very nature of that endorsement takes it out of the realm of being a primary policy, only for that very special instance where we're dealing with a real estate property manager. In other instances,
if you recover against Church, is the National Union claim still something we need to decide?
I think it is, Your Honor, because the judgment was somewhat in excess of Church's limits. So the coverage issue is quite valid and important. The point I would make was...
So you're saying when we add the interest and attorney's fees to the amount Church already paid, we're over their limits?
Under the terms of the Church's policy, attorney fees and interest are separate considerations that will be paid out in full, separate from whether their liability limits have been paid in full, and it's very specific.
So tell me the amount at issue as far as National Union is concerned.
It would be the excess beyond what Church paid out, which I think is, I'm sorry I don't have the figure in front of me, I think it's approximately $400,000+. And then I think that would be it. I think Church, it's our position that Church owes the interest that's accrued post-judgment and also our attorney fees. That's what we're talking about. So there is some coverage that implicates National Union.
I'm lost. I don't understand what coverage implicates National Union, because Church is going to, assuming we rule this way, Church is going to pay attorney's fees and post-judgment interest.
Yes.
And it's already paid the balance of its policy, the $450,000 or whatever it was. So what would National Union pay under your scenario?
Well, the total judgment, again, that Mr. Brown received was actually for $2 million and something. Now, Church had settled with Mr. Brown for, I think, $575,000.
Right.
That left approximately $300,000+ under its limits. But the portion of Mr. Brown's judgment against Capital was $1.35 million.
So what is Harleysville out of pocket on the settlement? Not interest and not attorney's fees, paying the claim.
Well, to begin with, the $350,000 or $375,000.
So that's what you want from National Union?
Yes. With respect to National Union's liability for coverage, there are a couple points I'd like to make. In their own policy, they indicate that their policy is excess to Churches. But in its very the terms of it, and this is at A79 in the record, they explain very expressly that if the applicable limits of the insurance is exhausted by payment of the claim by the underlying carrier, we will, in the event of exhaustion of the underlying limits, continue in force as underlying insurance. So as soon as Church's liability limits are exhausted by the very terms of National's policy, it becomes underlying. It takes over right where Church left off. Whereas the real estate endorsement for Harleysville explains, I think in very clear language, it's just one sentence long, that it is excess to all other available coverage. Clearly, National Union as well as Church's coverage is available to was available to Capital, even though it wasn't disclosed to them that it was available until years later. That's why we're here before the court today.
But doesn't National Union's policy also say that it's excess to all other policies?
Well, it does, but there's that proviso that Mr. Casarino referred to in his opening. It says in its other insurance clause, however, this provision will not apply if the other insurance, in this instance, Harleysville, is specifically written to be excess of this policy, and that's exactly the way Harleysville policy is written in that real estate management endorsement that we've been speaking of. And that's where we come from on it.
So you're saying that when Harleysville's policy doesn't make a distinction between primary and excess, it just says all policies, and then that triggers the provision in the National Union policy that makes the Harleysville the ultimate excess?
Yes. In that one very narrow exception of the property manager. I think my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.